BITCO is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BITCO.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm at the posh Saxon Hotel in Sandton to talk to Shane Wall, the Global Chief Technology Officer at HP and Director of HP Labs. Shane has just finished delivering a presentation to journalists about the future of technology, including its likely impact on Africa, which I'm pleased to be able to share with you in this podcast today. Shane talks about the explosive growth of mobile in Africa, the rise of mobile money, and opportunities for the continent to participate in the next wave of technology disruption. After the presentation, I sat down with Shane to chat about some of these topics in a little bit more detail. It's a fascinating presentation and discussion that follows on the future of technology.
I am the Chief Technology Officer. I'm the global head of HP Labs. HP Labs is the oldest corporate technology research institute in the world. It's 51 years old. The company's 78 years old. And as you probably know, the company is the founder of Silicon Valley. It is what started really the technology business here in the world. And so it's with, from that position, I get a chance to kind of steer where the company is going to go for the next 30 years. And that really is my role, is on the future. But to set the basis here, what I want to do is start with just simple what our strategy is, and just ground you, and then I'm going to spend a couple minutes talking about how we look at the world for the next 30 years, and put it within the context of the African continent, opportunities and challenges. And then we're going to talk about our vision of what we're going to go focus on to go do exactly that. Hopefully we'll spend a couple minutes if we've got some questions after that. So as a reminder, HP, we split the company about 2 years ago. It was about $110 billion U.S. dollar company. We split it into two entities. We call Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, and we call HP Inc. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise went after servers, storage, cloud, SaaS software sort of pieces. And HP Inc. Was focused on client side, end user devices, those that touch people. That's very central to it. We'll come back to that in a second. But that's what we focus on is printing. And that is everything from that which you know, the small little printers in your home, that which is in your company, giant printers that are the size of this building, and now evolving that into 3D printing as well. And then on the personal system side, it's all manner of client compute, PCs, tablets, phablets, phones, Internet of Things devices, everything in a compute domain. That's what HP is. So HP Inc., our simple strategy here, and we do try and keep it simple. Three main pieces, two big businesses, and then a set of software that cuts across it. Businesses themselves fall in printing, which is both traditional printing as well as 3D print. And then personal systems, like I say, is all of the compute side of the story. But we broke it up in terms of our core markets. Those are the large mature markets where we essentially are the number one market player in each of those segments. I think it's almost without exception on those segments. It's about a little under a 400 billion U.S. dollar TAM. Our focus here is really on reigniting the consumer in the print space. We've made tremendous progress on that this past year. Continue to grow our share in the office side. And then on the personal systems, we lead first with commercial. We lead first on that space where we think we add significant value, and then we opportunistically go after the consumer space. We do have targeted growth segments in each of those. A3 market is a big one for us. A3 is copiers. Today, HP has about a 3% share in copier business, as opposed to about a 40 to 50% share in the PC, or excuse me, in the print business. So that is a big growth opportunity. We recently announced the acquisition of Samsung's printing business to go after that part of the business for growth. And then graphics business, which is, it's not graphics as in on your screen, it's graphics as in packaging and printing. So think things like the labels on your bottles, the labels on packages of items that you buy, the containers of potato chips sort of stuff. All of that is graphics printing. And there's a huge, huge movement underway across the world, moving that from an analog, which is traditional analog presses like a Heidelberg press, into fully digital presses that can be customized on demand so that every package you print can be unique. If you're familiar with the Have a Coke on Me campaign, where everybody's name's on it, that is all done by HP's digital presses. Huge $50 billion TAM. We're the market leader in that. That's what the graphics business is here. And then on the personal system side, the push is on commercial mobility. Most of mobility is focused on consumer. We've been trying to aim at the commercial side. And then what I really focus on, that's where I really want to spend the bulk of the time, is the future. These markets are known. Our positions are strong. The moves are clear of what we need to do. And the question is, where are we going to go in the future? So to that point, I want to lay out how we do that and then what our vision is for it. So I said at the beginning about one of the benefits that came from the split is what we get to focus on is people. Because really our business touches people more so than what the combined entity did before. When you're in a cloud, it's a little harder to touch people directly. We touch people directly. And so our vision for the company is to deliver technology that helps people everywhere, all people everywhere. And so in order to fulfill that mission, what you've got to do is stand back and look at where humanity's going. So when we think of the future, we don't do it by looking at technologies and saying, how do they extrapolate? Yes, I do that as part of my HP Labs job. But that isn't how we think of the future. Think of the future by looking at the socioeconomic, geopolitical, social changes that are undergoing in our world for the next 30 years. So I want to spend a second talking about it. I'm going to put it within the context of Africa, the continent of Africa, both the opportunities and the challenges. And these are the things that we look at for how we could help Africa and how we could grow our own business at HP. So we do this in the context of what we call megatrends. And megatrends are trying to look at least 30 years, and sometimes it could be as far as 50 years in the future, and looking at what are the big changes going to happen. And there are four big ones that we try and summarize it into. One, rapid urbanization, which is the movement in society towards living in higher, more dense cities, where large portions of the population are moving to exactly those large urban centers. The second big one is some profoundly changing demographics like we haven't seen in many, many generations. In particular, what we're seeing is an older generation that is living longer. This is particularly the case in the Western or some of the more developed markets where lifespans are now extending into the 80s and people have wealth, or they have needs and they need services from government and a way to get them. And now suddenly you've got a population that is demanding aspects from technology that we never had before. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have a whole new generation coming in, Gen Z, that is unlike any generation before it. If you're a skeptic, you would say they have a tough time paying attention. Their attention span is very short. If you're an optimist, you would say they can context switch very quickly. But they grew up with technology. It was almost as if they came out of the womb and the first thing they had to do was decide, did they want an iPhone or did they want an Android phone? And they operate that way in many aspects of their life. The third big trend is hyperglobalization, and that is the breakdown of boundaries, and there will always be anomalies in between. There will always be, the countries that will erect barriers for short-term benefit, and there will always be issues with trade that we'll have to deal with, but you cannot stop what has become a hyper-globalized world. The internet is a backbone, has essentially driven that, and it has created huge opportunities for people, and it will create challenges as well. And then the final one is accelerated innovation, where just because of hyper-globalization, because of things like Moore's Law, because of the speed with which technology goes, innovative ideas have the opportunity to develop anywhere in the world, and they're based upon the unique needs in that locale, and their ability to scale in such an incredible speed we've never seen. We always use the example of Uber, right, which was purely a taxi company that went from nothing to $50 billion valuation in a couple short years. It's the idea of how fast innovation and different models can expand, and that we believe is opportunity for the African continent. So putting this within the context of Africa, there's some rather interesting challenges and opportunities in here, right? Obviously population. Population in Africa will overtake that of China and India by 2022. And by the end of the century, there'll be, over 4 billion people. 40%, I should say, not 4 billion. 40% of the population by the end of the century will be in Africa. And on these, in these bigger cities, there are currently about 29 or 30 megacities. A megacity is defined as 10 million people or more. By 2025, there'll be 41 megacities. And they're starting to be increasingly in Africa. Three of the top 15 are located here in Africa alone. But the challenges here are huge, right? Largest working age population in the continent of Africa by 2035. Working age population. The question is, what will they do? What will the jobs they focus on? And how do we actually ensure that there are profitable jobs for them to do? Education has always been the background of every successful society. The more we can focus on that, the more we can drive education, the better off you have economic development. And one of the big challenges we're going to have in Africa is a shortage of teachers. 6 million short in the traditional model. What it says you have to do, we have to do things different. So can we deliver remote education? And so it's interesting to watch, and we've been talking to a set of startup companies focused on how they can do remote education as a way to solve the 6 million teachers shortage. And finally, there are going to be more kids under the age of 10 in Africa than there is the total population of the U.S. Now, all of these are both opportunities and challenges. They're ones that if we confront them and we look at them and focus on them, we can create some really unique disruptive opportunities. But if we don't, then they're going to create the challenges of the future for us here as well. So when we look at these, right, we have some interesting things that go on in Africa. And these are the pieces I find most fascinating. And they're the ones that I saw when we spent time in TED Global of some of the most disruptive opportunities that we'll look to support and see what we can do to help accelerate. This is unique. 340 million Africans connected to the internet today. 99% of those come through mobile. And the mobile payment system that's in Africa itself is unrivaled anywhere in the world. Now, it was developed out of need, and it was developed out of not having access to a banking system. But what you've got now is the fabric of something that can be truly disruptive. You may hear what's known as the Christensen effect, which was named after a professor at MIT, And he wrote the idea that, you know, really what a Christensen effect is a new technology that comes in that's inferior to the existing technology, but it's significantly lower cost and it can solve a problem in a unique way. And that's where the opportunity is, we believe, as it relates to Africa overall. Yes, it may not be as fast, the bandwidth is slow. Yes, the phone quality may not be as good. They may be, you know, simpler phones, not the more mature phones that we see. But there's a unique payment system sitting in there. And how you exploit that unique payment system to do something different for Africa, we think, is a huge opportunity. Combine that with the development of cyber currency or blockchains. And one of the things that's fascinating, and I see technologies all around the world, one of the things that's very fascinating is how much cyber currency and blockchains have taken off in Africa. And they're taken off out of need, right? It's how do I get money out of one country into another? How do I move it from one part of another of the country to another in a world where it's difficult to do that? And things like Bitcoin give you that opportunity. Combination of those with mobile, I think, create unique opportunities for Africa that we hope to capitalize on. And then finally, and I've seen a lot of this over the last several years. Some of it really came to life in TED Global this year. Is some really interesting disruptive technologies that I think can be the basis of a Christensen effect for development. I think just about everyone knows the drone port in Rwanda. I assume so. Yes. Yeah. Okay, well, if not, here's a simple idea. What they did is, there's actually a few companies doing it, derivatives of it, but the one that was most interesting was this company. And what it did is, there was a need for moving blood, platelets, plasma, to critical areas in Rwanda that were not reachable. And a lot of it was due for, you know, just simple birth of babies and hemorrhaging that occurs post. And how do you go then make sure you have the right blood or plasma in order to solve those? And they solved it in a unique way. They took a drone. They used this drone in a central port. They put an infrastructure in place, and they hold all the blood and plasma in that place. When there's an urgent need, they actually load the blood into a drone. They launch it like a catapult. Flies at 100 kilometers an hour to the location where it's needed. It's dropped in a simple parachute on location. The drone returns and lands back at the port. That is so unique. You could never do that in any other part of the world. Never happen in the U.S., too highly regulated. Never will happen in Europe. And so what you have here is a Christensen sort of effect. The ability to develop a unique service to test it out, to solve the real problems here, and then for that to scale potentially to other parts of the world. It's indigenous technology creation that I think can impact the world substantially. Another big area is in lighting itself. You know, many parts of the continent all obviously have difficult time just getting light. But the disruptions that have come now, the amount of advancements that have come with solar. I mean, Africa's blessed with probably the greatest exposure of solar, of the sun, of anywhere on the planet. And the disruptive solutions that have come to that, which may seem so simple here. It may seem like all it did is turn on a light bulb, allowed me to turn on a radio, allowed me to boil a pot of water. But that simple thing, and it continues to develop and go, has the opportunity to scale across the rest of the world. And it's those sort of disruptions we find, I think, most interesting when we look at things in Africa. So one last slide, and it's really about our vision of what we're going to drive to for the company and how it relates to opportunities here in Africa. Is to go address some of the biggest problems that we see around the world, to address these mega trends. What we're doing is driving a vision we call blended reality. And it starts where it should start. It starts with people. It starts with the physical beings, us, the people, places, and things where we live. And it takes those and tries to understand them deeply, what the needs are, And then it finds what are the digital opportunities to go solve them in unique ways. And when we can do it in a virtuous reinforcing cycle where the technology itself is simple and basic and integrates into humanity, then we know we have a blended reality. The technology disappears into the background. Now I'd highlight four areas that we're going to do this in. And each of these has a different relation or opportunity, I think, for Africa. One, digital manufacturing. That's a loaded word, but here's the idea. Manufacturing is going to change substantially because of highly dense cities, because of the ability to manage or the need to manage precious resources. Manufacturing, how we develop products, has to change. The advent of 3D printing, not only 3D printing, but digital 3D printing, and the technology that we've developed at HP called Multi-Jet Fusion, allows us now to go realize this vision. Imagine a world in which what you do is you design a product anywhere in the world, you digitally transmit it wherever you want, it's localized in that part of the world, and it's printed or manufactured on demand in a digital way. Africa, I think, has some unique opportunities in this space where we don't have a lot of manufacturing in scale. We have a lot of need for products. And I think the system you're going to watch develop in manufacturing is not centralized in large countries or particular countries in the East, but distributed manufacturing that's digital in nature. And the ability to develop and prototype and try out some of those opportunities in Africa, I think, is substantial. Now, it may start out substandard. It may start out and look like it's not quite the quality you want, but we think it'll create the seed of what could be a new manufacturing, a digital manufacturing. The second is AI and smart machines, and that is machines themselves are getting smarter. Now, what opportunity we end up having for Africa will be remains to be seen. There were some interesting discussions at TED Global about how they could use AI to help solve some of the health crisis around the continent, and some of those in a set of startups who are looking at how they can do that. I think there's some interesting possibilities here. But I think it's also on the smart machines piece, which we invest heavily in. Give you an idea. Our 3D printer in this segment, 50% of the parts in the printer itself, 50% of the parts in the printer were printed by the printer itself. It's manufacturing itself. Imagine when you combine that with smart machines. So now he can get more intelligent about the parts that he can develop, the types of way he can pack a bed, the speed with which he can do it. The opportunity here, again, can become substantial. Healthcare. Huge opportunity around the entire world. Unique opportunities here. There's an area that we think is ripe for disruption. And we've done this through a set of investments both on the compute side as well as what we call microfluidics, which is taking our core print technology, and at the heart of it, at the heart of an inkjet printer, is essentially microfluidics, the ability to move fluids in an incredibly precise manner and to do it repeatedly. It turns out that that core capability is what's needed for a lot of mobile diagnostics, tests for things like communicable diseases, things like malaria, things like cancer. All of these can be done in a very disruptive way that doesn't exist today through microfluidics. And we think the lead in some of this may very well be in the African continent because you have lower regulation, you're hungry for inexpensive solutions, and you look for those opportunities to deploy those quickly. And then finally, it's the Internet of all things. It is, you know, compute. It's heavily driven by form factors that we know today that all of us are using, and those will continue to exist, and we'll probably benefit from the growth and our market position on that. But we actually think some of the bigger opportunities are going to come in just the simplest of solutions that can be deployed in ways to solve very basic problems. Now, maybe that's simply low-power compute connected with a low-bandwidth network. But it can be even, you know, even more basic than that. You know, imagine a world in which it's the Internet of all things, in which everything is connected. It did not have technology in it. Now that sounds a little cuckoo, but when you have digital manufacturing and this is really happening at that scale, you have the chance now for everything you make to be digital and part of the internet community. This is our vision. This is what we're aimed at HP, and it's why I've spent, 3 weeks here in Africa understanding the unique needs, the unique opportunities here, and they're tremendous. So thank you. With that, we have a couple minutes for questions.
So if you have any questions, obviously that's the time. Mm-hmm. That we can open the floor.
Yeah.
Sorry, staff. Not much on security, how do you see that fitting?
Thank you for saying that, and I should have. This is the backbone of all of these, and it is a huge investment we have. We do that in our core business on the PC side, as well as on the print side. We freely advertise and boldly advertise as the most secure printers and PCs in the world because of the investments that we made. But we also believe that that has to be the backbone. It's why it cuts across the top of everything that goes on in here. Is the security threat is not going to abate. It is going to get substantially worse, and we're going to have to take unique approaches to doing it. We frequently call those resilient networks. It's you got to be able to detect that there was an intrusion. That's important, but you got to assume that the bad guy will get in and figure out ways to do auto healing. And that's a big investment that we have here. That's kind of foundational for us.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the manufacturing side, how you see that working in practice, say in a city like Lagos or Johannesburg?
Yeah, there's two ways I see this developing. Okay, one of them will kind of be in a little bit of a traditional, and one of them will be in kind of a non-traditional disruptive. And the traditional mode, and we're seeing this happen today, is you're watching manufacturing move away from doing their manufacturing in traditional molds or casting sort of solutions. And what they're doing is replacing entire subsystems with 3D printed parts. Auto parts is a perfect example. Is imagine a world in which instead of having to have 10 years of auto parts stored up, all of those taking warehouse space and all of those sitting on your balance sheet somewhere, is imagine a world in which all you have is a digital file. And when a part breaks on a car, it's digitally sent to that place and then it's printed on demand at that locale, right? I mean, huge savings in waste and the like that will occur. Now, the more disruptive, and that's happening today. That's happening with all of the aerospace guys. It's happening with all the automakers, many parts of existing manufacturing going that. The second part is disruptive, and that's the one I find really the more interesting because I think the way this model moves ultimately is to these distributed networks. And where I think it'll start and the opportunity in places like Lagos or Johannesburg or any cities here is that think of kind of a supersized maker community or center, all right? That is an area. It has a 3D printer in it. It has a laser cutter. It has a plasma cutter. It has ways to mold some simple tools. But all of that is managed as a shared service. And that shared service is open to anybody who wants to bring jobs in. And so now the local person comes in, and they're an artisan or they're a craftsman, and they have some simple thing they want to make. Now what they can do is not one-off what took them weeks to make, but they have the ability to make one and then do tens, twenties, hundreds of them. And they can do it in a shared resource where they're just accessing it. They didn't have to buy the equipment. They didn't have to send it to Africa, or they didn't have to send it to Asia to be manufactured. They didn't have to worry about a supply chain that took them forever to get parts in. And that will happen. Our graphics business today is all built on exactly that model. It is regional, distributed print centers that people bring jobs to. That's the way it works around the world today. We see that same model happening in 3D. And that, I think, will be really interesting for areas in Africa. Okay. Perfect. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you where we're going and opportunities here. Thank you.
Shane, thank you for the presentation, and thank you for talking to Tech Central today. First of all, if you don't mind, please tell me a bit about HP Labs and some of the work it does. I understand that it was responsible for developing inkjet printers and 3D graphics, amongst other things.
Yeah, there's many. So HP Labs is actually 51 years old. It's one of the oldest corporate research institutes. It's based right in the heart of Silicon Valley in Palo Alto. And it has been part of some of the most disruptive changes, not only for HP, but more broadly. Certainly it was the home of inkjet printing, was invented there. A lot of our graphics-based printing business was there. And it was where the very first PC was actually developed many, many years ago, well before some of the early versions that were actually developed.
Wow, okay. So I want to talk a bit about printing of a different type, 3D printing, and you touched on it in your presentation this morning. I want to find out, there's been a lot of hype about it over the last couple of years, and certainly I think if you were a Gartner analyst a couple of years ago, you would have said this is at the peak of its hype cycle. Where are we in 3D printing? I mean, I've read The Economist has had cover stories on it saying it's going to change the world. Was it all hype, or is that revolutionary change from 3D printing still coming? And related to that, can you maybe give us a bit of insight into some of the work that HP is doing around 3D printing?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So 3D printing is not new. It's actually been around for, almost 30 years now from the original invention. And just like many technologies, it goes through a whole maturity curve, and certainly most recently from the hype standpoint, as you mentioned. But what has really changed and what's happened over the last 3 to 5 years, really, is that it has matured and the capabilities of the technology themselves have become substantially better. Mm. We've moved away from a model which got a lot of the hype that was very consumer-focused. We'd have a printer on our desktop. And some of that happens, but the quality is not what you would expect. And now where we've moved is into more of commercial industrial, where they're very mature, very good machines that can actually substitute pieces of manufacturing. And that's the big advantage of 3D printing.
You spoke about an HP printer that's actually manufacturing itself, or 50% of its components are being manufactured by the same HP printer, which is quite fascinating.
Yeah, so when we call that multi-jet fusion, and it is a very disruptive technology, and what it does is it actually is digital. It prints at actually a voxel level. A voxel is essentially a volumetric pixel. It's a 3D point in space. And at a voxel level, you have the ability to, describe all parts. You can describe what type of material it is, what color it is, translucency, stiffness, conductivity. You can print electronics into a part. And with the invention of multi-jet fusion, what we've done is created a technology that's 10 times faster than anything out there today, that can print parts at 50% of the cost of anything out there. It can do it with a quality that doesn't exist, and suddenly you have the ability to put it into manufacturing, not just prototyping. And finally, it's an open system. An open system meaning people can bring all sorts of materials into it to create new capabilities that we didn't even dream of.
Ultimately, where is this going? I mean, what is this 3D printing universe going to look like in 10 years' time?
I think it's the beginning of a digital revolution in manufacturing. In fact, what I call it is digital manufacturing. So we move from a world of traditional, as we've done it for the last 150 years, into really enabling that fourth industrial revolution. So now the way we manufacture things, or the way we would manufacture things in the future, is you design it anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. You transmit it digitally to where you need it. You personalize and change it in the digital domain. At the push of a button, you print or manufacture it.
And do you believe that Africa can play a role in this?
I think there's
ecosystem.
Some really unique opportunities for Africa. And in particular, if you believe in a vision that moves to more of a digital manufacturing, I think you're going to see regional manufacturing hubs evolve, kind of like a 3D print center. Mm-hmm. And the centers themselves will be a combination of a 3D printer along with simple tools like maybe a laser cutter, the ability to mold parts, and some simple compute. Mm. And that would all be done in a community center. And so you can imagine, and those are already being developed today around the world, And you can imagine that happening, and you see some of that happening in Africa, where you now can put that in a regional area that can be a shared resource among multiple to develop or take products or crafts or what artisans have done, and to do it in a scalable way.
Okay. Now, you've spent the last 3 weeks traveling around Africa, I believe mainly up in East Africa and then later down here in South Africa. You've mentioned that Africa has been a mobile story. It's largely missed the PC era. Is this a problem? How do you code on a phone? And is it not going to turn Africa into a continent of technology consumers rather than technology exporters if we don't... If we're coming at it entirely from a mobile focus?
I really don't think it will. I think a lot of, especially in some of the developing worlds, taking unique approaches that can solve problems in unique ways that are specific to that area becomes a huge opportunity. Now, you know, sometimes you can develop something and when you compare it to what the absolute best is, it might look inferior. But it could be substantially cheaper and solve a problem in a more unique way. And as a result, things like mobile, where you now have 99% or something like that penetration of mobile, and you have mobile payment systems that are incredible in terms of – they're unrivaled anywhere in the world today. And that forms a backbone of something that doesn't exist elsewhere in the world. And leveraging that for other opportunities, I think, becomes a huge opportunity.
Okay. You also mentioned, and you didn't really go into any detail, but you also mentioned the continent has faced a lot of challenges in the past. What are some of the challenges you see as being specific to the growth in the technology space on the continent?
It's a series of things. Almost all societies, as they advance, the very first key pillar is education. And having a commitment, a deep commitment to education that includes the technical, modern technical needs is crucial. And I think, Africa is going to have to look how they solve that in unique ways. And then the other ones is, we think of Africa as a continent, but it's really a series of a bunch of independent countries. And so how those we end up establishing cooperating mechanisms, how trade matures, all of those are going to be things that are going to determine how Africa succeeds in the future.
Okay. I know we're running very low on time already, but I want to ask you a last, perhaps quite detailed question. We've been through major waves of computing from the mainframe era to client-server computing to the rise of the internet, and now I guess we're in the cloud computing era. What, in your view, is coming next, and what's going to drive it?
I think you're going to watch, I frequently call it the Internet of All Things, and I think it's a movement where, you certainly have a cloud-based computing today, but it has serious limitations. And especially when you look in rural areas in Africa that are not connected to a cloud, same thing in India or in China. And small devices that have low power compute, sensing, and the like will create a distributed opportunity for computing. It's estimated that over 25 billion devices, independent devices, will be created and connected up to the Internet over time. I think that's the next phase you're going to see.
IoT is going to drive the next big wave.
Yep, IoT.
And, of course, if once everything's connected, we're going to have to pay very careful attention to how to secure all of this stuff.
Security is the key. It is the backbone. It is the foundation of what we do. We certainly are committed to that in our core business and PCs and print. But you're not going to see security threats abate. And the key is for us to stay focused on how those evolve. And I think a key piece of that is, you always want to keep the bad guy out, so you figure out ways to lock your doors, to secure your windows, but you always must assume they're going to break in. And when they do in the physical world, we figure out ways to get rid of them. We have to use that same analogy in the compute world. We call it cyber resiliency. Mm-hmm. It's the idea, do everything you can to keep them out, expect the bad guy is going to get in, and then develop cyber resilient networks in order to overcome that that intrusion.
I suppose half the time the challenge is actually knowing when they got in, if they got in.
That is true. You have to watch patterns.
Shane Wall is Chief Technology Officer at HP and Director of HP Labs. Thank you for joining us on the Tech Central podcast.
Thank you.